Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response midday for the 19th of Elul. Today we're going to see some of the tshuvot from the 19th of Elul, written by the Tzitzeliezer, a tshuva from Tafresh Tzavi Zion from 1937. So the Tzitzeliezer, at the time, was only 21. He didn't publish this material until volume 10 of Tzitzeliezer, so it's almost like, and this is tshuva 32, response 32 in that volume. It's almost like he collected. I know that from other tshuvot, he mentions that he has papers and he kept files of things that he wrote and things that he did. And then at some point later in his life, he decided that maybe it was worth publishing it. And that's part of the reason that we're blessed with all the 20-something volumes of Tzitzeliezer that we have. So the young Tzitzeliezer is speaking at a hadron on Maseches Brachos. So a hadron is when somebody finishes the study of Maseches, or a group finishes the study of Maseches. Hadron is this tradition of things we say at the end to celebrate that completion and to discuss the value of Torah study and our intent and hope that we return to this material in the future and other material like that. But it also refers to, very often, somebody would give a Dvar Torah to sort of mark the completion of that piece of learning. So the 19th of Elul of Tafresh Tzadi Zion of 1937, at a completion of Masechet Brachot, the Tzitzeliezer notes the material, the text on that last little page in Brachot, and he starts reading them and discussing them. So one thing that said there is, Omer Rav Avin HaLevi, Kol Anen Emisudash Tamid Chacham Sharui Bitocha, that anybody who enjoys a meal, who takes part in a meal, but the word is hanehneh, that would be relevant. Hanehneh misuda, who gets benefit from a suda, from a meal, at which a talmud chacham is sharui bitocha. So sharui bitocha means his presence is there. It's missed. We assume right now that it means he's eating there as well, but we'll see to this discussion. It's as if he is getting benefit or enjoying the shining of the divine presence. And how do we know that? The Gemara says, Rav Avin says, we know that because when Yitro comes to visit Moshe, the Pasuk says that Aaron and all of the other elders came to eat lechem im chotein Moshe with the father-in-law of Moshe, lifnei ha'elokim, before Hashem, before God. And the Gemara comments, Rav Avin comments, they weren't, how were they before God? Lifnei ha'elokim achlu. It was Moshe who was there. We don't have any sense that this is before the Mishkan is built. So in what sense is it been before God? Now, literally, it's because it was mentioned that they ate zvachim, I think. So they were making sacrifices. That makes it before God. But Reb Avin HaLevi, in his Midrashic reading of this, is saying it was before Moshe, to tell you that anybody who eats at a meal, that Moshe, that a Talmid Chacham is there, as if they enjoyed the presence of the Shechina. The Magen Avraham, the Tzitzeliezer, now Tzitzeliezer is pointing out, the Magen Avraham in Tov Kuf Samechet, in 568.5, points out, now let's say somebody takes a neder. So the whole topic of the Darim is a complicated one that we won't have time to get into really today, but for some reasons, people can choose to vow certain things. So let's say somebody took a neder, Latsum Asara Yamin, to fast 10 days. And they don't say which 10 days. And then, and on one of the days that they're fasting, some mitzvah opportunity comes up, or there's the honor of a certain important person comes up, and therefore it would be much better for this person if he didn't have to fast. So the halacha is, the Magen Avraham says, he can be loveh, he can stop fasting, uporeya, and fulfill that fast another time. And the reason is that he didn't promise to fast. He didn't make an oath to fast these 10 days. You make an oath to fast 10 days, not consecutive. So therefore, it's no particular day that he designated as being part of the neder at the beginning of this neder. And that could be also true, the Magen Avraham says that's also true, for a Sudat Tamid Chacham, that let's say somebody is fasting because of this promise, and then the opportunity comes to have a meal with a Tamid Chacham, with a Torah scholar, but they're fasting. So the Magen Avraham says, well, that's enough of a need that the person can stop fasting, and because it's considered a mitzvah that came along, like that idea that we just had a second ago. The Machatzit HaShekel says that the Chavos Yar doesn't sound like that. The Chavos Yar sounds like just eating with a Torah scholar doesn't qualify as a Sudas Mitzvah, doesn't qualify as a meal at which it's a mitzvah to eat. Now, the Tzitzileza says, I think there's also a distinction between a Brit Milah or Pidgin Aben or a Chanukat HaBayit Be'eretz Yisrael. That's the category that's the most surprising of the three. He thinks there's a meal like a bris, a meal like the Pidgin Aben, where there's a child who has to be redeemed from the Kohen after 30 days of living, a firstborn. That's a certain kind of a meal. And there's also dedicating a house in Eretz Yisrael. Somebody's living in Eretz Yisrael and they built their house and they have a dedication of the house in Eretz Yisrael. Those are mitzvot that would justify breaking a fast, but not a Sudas Tamid Chacham. Why is it different? Because he says that the Sudat Milah, the bris meal, or the Pidyon HaBen meal, or the celebration of the dedication of a house in Israel, the mitzvah there is to have the meal. And the reason the mitzvah of the meal is to make the mitzvah that the person hosting the meal is celebrating that much more dear to them, that they should have a better feeling about it. So if somebody's making a bris and any of us goes to that bris and celebrates the bris with them, it makes them happier about having had the bris. It makes them have a better feeling about it. The Tzitzileis are saying that's the mitzvah of eating at the Seudah. It's also a mitzvah to help them thank Hashem for their good fortune, either to have had the baby who's having a bris, or have the baby who's having a Pidyon HaBen who's the firstborn, or to have had the good fortune to have a house in Eretz Yisrael, in the land of Israel, to celebrate with them as they thank Hashem in a greater public that gave them the good fortune to have this happen to them. And he thinks that might also be Zekeli Van Veer. This is a Jewish tradition. We're supposed to perform mitzvot with as much beauty and na'ut and niceness as possible. And this might help. Having a bigger meal makes it a nicer, better mitzvah. So we try to find a good lulav. We try to buy nice-looking tefillin and well-written tefillin. So too, we try to do these mitzvot with a bigger meal. So that's why if the mitzvah is the meal itself, then it would make sense that if you're in the middle of a fast, even if you're in the middle of a fast day, that you had thought it was going to be a fast day for your neder, for your vow, you could decide that, no, today I actually won't have that neder, I'll do it a different day. But in the case of having a meal with a Torah scholar, Tzitzileis says, the mitzvah isn't the meal, the mitzvah is the closeness and the relationship that can be created with the Torah scholar. It's just that the meal leads to that and helps with that. So that would be a reason. So in other words, so that wouldn't be a reason to break the fast. And also, Gemara Kedubot and Kuf Yud Aleph Amid Bet says, on the pasuk that we say, we all know from saying it around the time of taking the Torah out, V'atem adikim Hashem l'kechem chayim kochem hayom, you who cleave to Hashem are all living today. The Gemara says, V'chiyav shel dvukei b'shechina, can you cleave to the divine presence? But it's rather connecting to a Torah scholar. But the Gemara there gives a couple of examples of ways to connect with a Torah scholar. There's marrying one's daughter to a Torah scholar. So that will create a connection because whenever one sees one's daughter, one will see the Torah scholar. There'll be the family connection. Or hamehanet hamin chacham min nechasav. Or if somebody helps the Torah scholar by having the Torah scholar benefit from one's own property, either by joining a business venture together or just giving them money or letting them live in your house, that would be other ways in which one could create a connection to a Torah scholar. And so Rav Tzitzileizer says, and that's what the Gemara in Brachos means as well, when it says eat at a meal with a Torah scholar, it really means to enjoy the connection. So he would say that on the day that a man started or a woman started fasting because of an oath, then that's not going to be an available means of getting close to a Torah scholar. And you'll have to find on that one day other ways to do it. In other words, as the Ezra is saying, if somebody took an oath to fast 10 days and then they started one particular day, Magen Avraham is right that it's not necessarily so that this has to be the day that fulfills that part of the oath, because one could, for various causes, stop fasting and then at a later date do that fast. But it's not just for any reason, right? It's not just like, I don't feel so great, I'm not in the mood anymore, it turns out. It's got to be a mitzvah reason. And the Magen Avraham said, eating with the Torah scholar is a mitzvah reason. So it says, no, it's not a mitzvah reason in that sense, because the mitzvah reasons would be things where the meal itself is the mitzvah, but here it's not that way. It's not the mitzvah, the meal is not the mitzvah. And also, there are other ways to perform this same other mitzvah. So therefore, you have to do it in other those ways. And he says, if you look at the Rambam says it that way. Mitzvah taseh lehidabek, that the mitzvah is to connect to Torah scholars. And so on this day, you'll have to use other means rather than that means. But then he wants to say, but the Magen Avraham is not wrong. It's just the perspective of how the Magen Avraham think what he thought. You could say, that the Magen Avraham would say that no, eating at a meal with the Talmud Chacham actually has irreplaceable aspects to it, because certainly the Talmud Chacham, the Torah scholar, will say things at the meal, Divrei Torah, and the Mishnah and Avot says that if three eat together and they have Divrei Torah, it's as if they ate from Shulchano Shel Makom, from the table of Hashem, as it were, and then, so, that would turn even a ordinary meal, where it's just a sudat harishut, would turn it into a mitzvah meal. And so therefore, you could say that the Magen Avraham would say that just like there's a mitzvah to offer sacrifices and eat from korbanot, they eat there, here too that's a mitzvah, the mitzvah, the meal itself will become a mitzvah by virtue of the Divrei Torah. That's what the Magen Avraham would hold. Again, Stilizer are saying he doesn't think you have to hold that way, but it at least explains what the Magen Avraham meant, that he meant that by virtue of what the Talmud Chacham will do with the meal, it'll really make the meal a sudas mitzvah in the fullest sense of the word, such that the person could, it's called being loved, borrowing the vow, meaning stopping today's experience of the vow and doing it on a different day. And that's based on another Gemara that says where Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar say that when the Beis Hamikdash used to be around, you had kapara, we had atonement through the sacrifices. Today, we don't. A person's table can provide that kapara. And so it says, by virtue of that they, or the Gemara there says that they say Divrei Torah, and by virtue of saying Divrei Torah, by virtue of having real Torah said at the meal, the food is sanctified and it becomes like partaking of a sacrifice. So this isn't, so there's a talking, but I just point out that he's saying a great deal about the way we should approach our meals and approach our eating. Not that it's simple to do, and I'm not saying that it's obvious how people activate it, but that one should ideally approach the act of eating in a meal, especially in a meal, not just snacking, but especially in a meal, as an opportunity to turn it into an experience of kedusha, an experience of sanctity. And that's certainly going to be true. So this says, at a meal with a Torah scholar, because the Torah scholar not only will say Divrei Torah, I'm interjecting myself here, and I apologize if that's not what you're looking for, but I would just point out, if you look around at meals where Divrei Torah are being said, right? Very often, the way Divrei Torah, Torah words are said at a meal, is that you reach a certain point in the meal, everybody says, okay, let's hear our Torah. Person starts talking. Now, sometimes I've been that person, but often I haven't been that person, and I look around the table, and people's eyes glaze over. Now, every so often, you have a really talented speaker at the meal who, even at a casual meal, when asked for Divrei Torah, says something that everybody really hears and everybody listens to. But my experience is that most people aren't really listening, not out of any deep desire not to listen. It's just, it's not in their frame of reference. They so much want to listen to those kinds of things. So it's always been my preference to find meals where it's not Divrei Torah at the meal, like somebody stops at Divrei Torah. It's the Torah topics come up and people have a discussion around it. And in the course of that, Divrei Torah, words of Torah come out. If one can do that, that's, I think, even better. But still, this gives another way that the Talmud Chacham, the Torah scholar, can make the meal with Divrei Torah, with words of Torah, can make the meal into a more sanctified occasion. He says that the eating, the Torah scholar will teach them that we eat kedei lechazik haguf, that to strengthen our bodies, shiyehe koach la'avod haborei, that they should be strong enough to serve Hashem. Now, it's got to be true that even at 21, he knew that not every Torah scholar at every meal is going to say that, because it would get boring after a while. So I think his point is that the Torah scholar will give a perspective on eating and other Torah values in the course of a meal, and that that is what will make the meal for people attending there a mitzvah experience, because it's really like being in Hashem's presence, in the sense of they get a reminder of how much and how important it is to serve Hashem through the act of eating. And then, if that's the way to read it, not that he's holding this way, but if you want to support the Magen Avraham view, that's the way we read what the Torah scholar does, that it really becomes that the meal is itself a mitzvah. Remember, he had said before, maybe that's only true of a brit milah or of dedicating a house in Eretz Yisrael, but in this way of looking at it, you can say the meal itself is a mitzvah because it's by virtue of eating at the meal that one gets the Torah perspective or a Torah perspective on eating and how eating helps us with our service of Hashem. And all of that will come together in terms of this meal. So because the eating itself becomes an act, he says, of service of Hashem. And he says that might even be indicated in the words of the original memra in the Gemara in Brachot, which said, any meal shetamid chacham sharui bitucha. So sharui, like I said before, theoretically just means, in a limited sense, just means is present there. So this says, but maybe the word Sharoi, like we think about the not parallel, but the use of that same kind of terminology for the presence of Hashem's presence, right? The Shekhinah is Sharoi somewhere. Could mean shekoach hashpa'ato, that its influence is felt. Shematzil meirucho ala misubim, that he applies his spirit to those who are gathered there. So that would be the chavichachim, not just there, but it's actually influential in the meal, which is another interesting question. I've been at meals of both kinds. You have a great Torah scholar at a meal, often. I've been at such meals, and everybody there recognizes and has the appropriate respect for the Torah scholar. And that means that in a lot of ways, the conversation sort of drifts towards the Torah scholar, because everybody wants to know what the Torah scholar thinks about the various issues that comes up. That would be exactly the kind of meal he's talking here, because then, one's eating at that meal is the eating of benefiting from the presence of the Torah scholar and from the ideas of the Torah scholar, and one earns and gains benefit in that way. That would be like before eating for the time friends. I have unfortunately also been at meals where you have a great Torah scholar there, and he's, you know, one of the people at the meal, or she is one of the people at the meal. So that's a different kind of experience, and I'm not sure that would fit the Mogen Avraham's picture then, of making it a value worthy of borrowing one's vow, meaning of ending the tainus, the fast that one had vowed to do, and then for another day. So that doesn't come up in the details exactly, but that's implicit in his words here, is that what we're talking about when we say a meal of a Torah scholar, we meal a meal where the Torah scholar is going to wield his or her influence, not in an aggressive way, not in an enforcement way, not in an oppressive way, but everybody there realizes and understands what they're getting out of the presence of this person. It says, and all of this line of reasoning explains another Gemara. Gemara Yoma Rav Brechia says that if you want to, today, when we don't any longer have an altar, have a mizbeach, if you want to libate wine on the mizbeach, fill the throat of a Torah scholar with wine. So how does that help? So Ezra says, I think it's very interesting, that when people have wine, they speak more volubly, their tongues are loosened. And therefore what? Therefore, he says, the Torah scholar will reveal secrets of Torah that ordinarily would be tzmunimet, that would be hidden within him, and by that, the other people there will get aspects of Torah they never would have gotten before, and then the food is thought of as offering a sacrifice, etc., etc., etc. And that's the wine, and therefore the wine is thought of as the libation. Now, part of what's interesting to me about that, and I think it bears thinking about for all of us, is that Torah scholars don't reveal all they know all the time. And there could be lots of reasons for that. Some of the things, which I don't think the tzitzis are meant, I think some of the things, and there are plenty of things that are considered Torah Torah in the sense that other people aren't ready for them, and therefore it's not appropriate for a Torah scholar to reveal them. That would be some kinds of things. So the solution to that would be for us to become the kinds of people to who are ready for such things that Torah scholars will tell us, the kinds of things they ordinarily wouldn't tell us. But I think he means more than that. I think, I could be wrong, but I think the Torah scholars walk around with tremendous amounts of knowledge, and often or usually they understand the people around them don't want to hear all the stuff that they know. So they hold themselves back, as in some sense of politeness is appropriate, but also comes as a cost to the people who are not going to gain that Torah. So if you make a Torah, if you give a Torah scholar a little bit of wine, we're not talking about getting them drunk, we're talking about a little bit of wine, they will feel looser and more comfortable and will reveal more than ordinarily they would, and the rest of us can hopefully be smart enough to take advantage of that. I do remember that many years ago my parents used to go to wherever it was, and there was a certain Torah scholar there who has since passed away, but I still don't feel like naming names here, because their reaction always was that he wasn't a very good speaker. Very, very wonderful man. They always respected his character, was you know, almost impeccable, and he had tremendous amounts of Torah knowledge, but he's really not a very good speaker, and that got in the way of people benefiting from his Torah knowledge. There used to be a shul dinner every year, and this shul dinner that they would also go to, he would have a drink or two, and it would loosen him up, and he would get up to speak, and they said it was like his best speaking of the year, because he was more comfortable, and things came out better, and that means those people gain more from his Torah in that instance. So this kind of thing is what they're saying. So having a Torah scholar at a meal, then possibly, not that he agrees, but the Mogen Avraham would have said that there's values there that are such that one would have the right to delay one's fast, to push it off, and to end the fast that day, and to partake of the meal. That's about partaking of a meal. Now, in terms of he had said that dedicating a house in Israel was another kind of a meal that qualified for this, right? He says, in terms of the mitzvah of living in Israel, he says there's two aspects to living in Israel. One is that by living in Israel, one is in some sense getting closer to Hashem. He basically, there's a Medrash Rabbah that says on the pasuk that you should cleave to Hashem, Achrei Hashem Telechu Uvot Tidbakun. Hang on to Hashem, as it were, cleave to Hashem. How can you do that with Hashem? So this answer, there's lots of midrashim that talk about that question. The answer given by this midrash by Rabbi Bar Simon, I don't know if it's Rabbi Yehuda or Yochanan or Rabbi Yoshua, whatever. The answer here is that at the beginning of the world, we see that Hashem plants, right? It says, "Vayita Hashem Elokim Gan Be'eden," that Hashem plants a garden. So therefore, you too. The Midrash says, when you go to Eretz Yisrael, start with planting, start with agriculture, as the Pasuk says, V'ki tavo el aretz, and you get to the land of Israel, it's talking about the Pasuk, the mitzvah of Kala, unetatem, it says, or Orla, it says you're going to plant trees. So part of connecting to Hashem and connecting to the land of Israel is being involved in agriculture, and that's part of connecting to Hashem. Notice this is 1937 when he's saying this, so it's interesting because it's a time when the settlement of Israel is still relatively small. There's already, I think, 150,000 people, but we today, Baruch Hashem, have, I think, 6 million Jews in Eretz Israel, let alone the non-Jewish residents of Eretz Israel. So it's exploded since then, but at the time it was very small, and agriculture was a much larger portion of the economy than it is today. It's still an important part, but it's a much smaller part. So he's giving a plug for farmers, many of whom weren't, in fact, observant, and yet he's giving a plug for that and saying that there's evidence in the Medrash Rabbah that this is a religious act and is a way of connecting to Hashem. And the other aspect of Israel, he says, is that it's a Mizbeach Kapara. It serves, it qualifies as an altar of atonement. He gets this Gemara Ketubot on Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph 111a, and the Rambam says it as well, that Eretz Yisrael provides kapara, just the land of Israel in some sense itself. It's almost like a mizbeach offering korbanot, even such that people who are buried there. This is a well-known Gemara, and it's one that always makes me think whenever I go to funerals and burials in America or anywhere else outside of Israel, that I wonder about that choice. So sometimes people say to me, you know, it's really just prohibitively expensive. It's really much too much money to be able to bury in Eretz Yisrael, and that could be true. I don't know people's finances. But sometimes there are people of means, people who I have every reason to believe have means, who choose to be buried outside of Israel. And it's here in 1937, and others long before him, and many after him. But yet the Gemara in Ketubot says, it's like a Mizbeach Kaparat, provides atonement. It's from a verse in the very end of Ha'azinu, of the song of Ha'azinu, V'chiper Admato Amo, that his land, Hashem's land, as it were, will provide kapara for its nation. All the more so, he says, somebody who lives in Israel in his life, that his sins will be atoned. He has a Medrash Shulchan Aruch that also says that about those who live in Eretz Israel, that they also have no sin. And that's because, since the Ezra now says, it's because the air of Eretz Israel and its sanctity makes people wiser, makes people more closer to Kedusha, to sanctity themselves. And just like Truman Maaser bring sanctity to the world and to the food and make the food more Kadosh, more sanctified, the eating of that food more sanctified, so too Eretz Yisrael itself, the land of Israel itself, is truma mikol ha'aratzot. It's like a, almost like a tithe. If you have a whole harvest, you have to give a 1.5%, 2% of it to a Kohen, 2.5% of it to a Kohen, and that makes the whole harvest an act of service of Hashem. So too, he's saying, sort of analogously, if you take Eretz Yisrael, a tiny percentage of the world, and you give it to Hashem, dedicate it to Hashem, it helps the whole world become more sanctified, but Eretz Yisrael itself is the truma, and it makes the Jewish person who lives there all that much more sanctified. And then there are other memorot about the Torah of Eretz Yisrael being better than all other Torah, and all of the Nevi'im, all the Nevi'im developed in Eretz Yisrael after Eretz Yisrael was already was settled, and that's the place where it's most likely that one will be able to see the Noam Hashem, enjoy the benefit of the experience of the presence of Hashem, etc., etc. So he says, but you have to know that Eretz Yisrael is, like Daniel says, Yahiv Chochma L'Chakimin, it gives wisdom to the wise. And unless the person recognizes what Eretz Yisrael is going to provide for them, it's called the Hitoruta Dilatata. It's a Kabbalistic concept, but it just means that as in the person who is going to get the benefit and knows what they're doing, without them having the intent of doing it, they won't get all the benefits of it. So if somebody really wants to become tahor and purified by Eretz Yisrael, then the merit of Eretz Yisrael will help them very much. As there's a phrase that says, if we open for Hashem a petach, an opening, even as small as a needle, Hashem will open a wide one for us. And the verse says, V'kadishtem v'itim kadoshim, we make ourselves kadosh, and then Hashem makes us kadosh, etc. So he's got a bunch of things like that. And therefore, it's not true that everybody can do this. It's somebody who wants to come to Eretz Yisrael, remember 1937, so there are going to be a lot of people going to be coming in the, you know, in the next 11 years, the population of Israel will grow about fivefold. To the desert, just writing for himself or giving a talk at a siyum that he's making, says whoever wants to come has to start by doing tshuva, has to start by repenting their sins, which today, he says, is instead of actually bringing a sacrifice that would be necessary for those sins, and also he has to make himself more sanctified, even those things that are permissible, to adopt certain kinds of sanctity, and that will prepare one, he's saying, for Eretz Yisrael. And he gives a story in the Gemara in Brachos and Nun Zayin Amud Aleph from Zera. Never went from Bavel to Eretz Israel. He wanted to move to Israel. He never moved until he saw barley in a dream. So the word for in Hebrew for barley is se'orim, and he took it as a sign, se'orim, a play on the word se'orim, shesaru avonotav, that his sins had gone away. So the Tzitzit says the reason why he waited till then is because to go to Eretz Israel, one has to go there, Biktusha and Tara, and he had to wait until he had a sense that his sins were atoned enough. Now, in our days, I can imagine people using that as an excuse not to go. They say, well, my sins aren't atoned enough. But I think it just means that part of the preparation for going to Eretz Yisrael should be a concern with atoning and fixing one's sins. So, he says, after we've learned that, back to now our Hadron, and all this has been from that first statement in the last page of the Gemara in Brachot, that Rav Avin Halevi had said that being at a meal with a Torah scholar is like enjoying the meal of a Talmid Chacham. Then he skips two other ma'amarot, two other statements of Rav Avin that are really only there to finish up his ma'amarim. So the Gemara brings Rav Levi Bar Chiya, who says that if somebody goes out of shul and right into the Torah to the study hall, right, to study Torah and involve himself in Torah, he too will merit the divine presence. As Rav Avin Halevi had said, being at a meal of Torah scholar, the theme now is finding ways to merit the divine presence. There's a pasuk says Yelchu Michael Achel, they go from one strength to the other strength, and then they'll see Hashem Yirei Elokim Bitzion. So he says that's what's going on here, and the reason is that if somebody goes straight from prayer to study, that will be an example of putting Yirat Hashem or Yirat Chet, fear of sin, before one's wisdom. The problem with Torah study is always that we have to be sure that the Torah study gets into a person whose character is strong enough and appropriate enough to be a real Torah scholar. So that's why the Mishnah Avot says you have to have Yirat Chet, fear of sin, you have to have a commitment to not sinning, stronger than or prior to one's wisdom, one's Torah study. And therefore, if you go to the shul first and then to the Beit Midrash, without any break between them, then you're linking them and you're showing that you're understanding that the relationship with Hashem that's created through davening has to be what infuses one's Torah study, that has to be for its own sake, and that only a Torah scholar like that will merit the divine presence. And then the Gemara Brachos finishes with Amar Rav Elazar ben Chanina, the Torah scholars multiply peace in the world, because it's a Torah scholar like this who knows that fear of sin is essential to the wisdom itself, and that without that fear of sin, the wisdom itself is lacking. It's not Torah, it's not an academic study that one can develop great Torah knowledge, becomes a great Torah scholar without that fear of sin. So that kind of a Torah scholar who knows that, and therefore goes straight from shul to studying to Torah study, and connecting and linking oneself to such people, that brings the world closer to the full kingdom of heaven. And then from there, you certainly get shalom, you get peace in the world, because, remember, this is 1937, and maybe that the winds of war are already blowing, that's Tzitzit's worry of it. But if the whole world knows that we have to serve Hashem, then And other, I think there are historians who would say, well, you saw plenty of people who thought they were serving Hashem and got into a fight or wars about it. Different topic, not for our time. But if people really serve Hashem properly and truthfully, then all of the fights and all of the wars will go away because war, he says, comes from the fact that there's no full peace in the world because people aren't serving the one Hashem. You have, at least metaphorically, if not literally, if you have all the angels in the world that represent the various nations, there's no peace up in heaven as well, and Hashem's name isn't whole and complete in the world. But when everybody agrees that the world should be the place of the Malchut Shakai, of Hashem's kingship, that's a great cause to bring true peace and true awareness, and not having, as the Pasuk Yeshayah says, "Leisu goyel goy cherev," that we will fight in war with swords, and then we'll get true peace. And so, all of that peace, he says, is also everyone knows connected to the peace of the Jewish people. So that's why we always end with Hashem Ozda Moyitin, Hashem Yivrechad Mo Bashalom. Hashem should give strength to the Jewish people and bless them with peace, because that will be a peace that spreads out to the rest of the world. So, since the Ezer had a hadron he made at a very young age, at the age of 21, for the 19th of Elul, 5697, 1937, a hadron on brachos, talking about Torah scholars and their role in the world, talking about building houses in Eretz Yisrael and making aliyah, and talking about finding peace for all of us. We can hope that we all find peace very soon. This has been a responsible day for the 19th of Elul. Thank you for joining us. We hope to see you again soon. Have a great day.